Goodness gracious, great murder balls of fire! It's the Bitter End Podcast, the Phantasm Season, with me, Tom Denny.
And me, Todd Jordan. And let me tell you something, Tom, I am still mad about balls!
Oh, good, because the trailer for Phantasm IV Oblivion really wants you to still be on that balls fix.
Well, what I like about it is they're sticking with the ball swarm that we only got a little glimpse of at the end of Lord of the Dead, where we had Reggie pinned against the ceiling by a horde of tiny balls. Like
yes,
a
and we thought, well, Reggie's fucking dead, isn't he? He's not.
He's got the same outfit, shotgun.
He's got the shotgun, but he's back in the Ice Cream Man outfit.
Yes.
Which is, I'm glad he's returning to his Mr. Whippy roots.
This trailer that we just watched, dear listeners, it is all about the balls, but it's also a lot about cars. There's so many cars in this. Lots of different cars that all whiz past and then explode one at a time.
I mean, the Phantasm series does like an exploding car. There's probably an exploding car in every film.
Yeah, this one seems to have an awful lot. And a lot of nooses as well. There were two separate shots of people being hung up by the neck.
Some nooses. I think we saw Michael in there with his weird, creepy murder ball eyes that he got at the end of the last film, where there was suddenly a lot of questions were put to you and not answered. So we're going to see what happens there. Reggie's not dead. He's back rocking the all white. He's got his big gun. What else is going on? There's some CGI murder ball swarms. Like, they've got a bit more, fluid, a little bit more loosey-goosey. The tall man's in there.
He's running around. It's interesting to note that this is the shortest turnaround time between Phantasm films yet.
Ooh.
So the original Phantasm 1, the big murder ball that started it murder all, was 1979. And then Phantasm 2 was 1988, so quite a long gap there. Then the gap from Phantasm 2 to Phantasm 3 was 6 years, so that was 1994. This one is only 4 years later, 1998, so they're picking up speed.
Picking up some speed,
as it may be. And I'm hoping that we're going to kind of feel that momentum, that impetus in a lot of the writing, and maybe dive into what Oblivion truly means.
I mean, the trailer is very, when it kind of kicks in, it's very fast-paced, action-packed. It's like, feels like it's like gearing up towards something. The stakes might be raised, or we're going to get a little bit of something new. Every Phantasm film, you get a little bit of something new, another little glimpse into what the fuck is going on with the world of the tall man. So I'm looking forward to that. I am thinking, this trailer begins with the same quote of every other trailer, which is Phantasm, the
delusions of a disordered mind. A ghost.
Yes.
And every time we're like, but it's not about ghosts. It's about like aliens and murder balls and other dimensions and little goblin-y guys, little brains and murder balls. It's about anything but ghosts.
It really is.
There are no ghosts in this. And not really, a disordered mind, unless I'm just thinking, is the very last twist of the last Phantasm film going to be that it is all the delusions of a disordered mind, and it's all been going on in Michael's head, and it was just all going to have been a dream? I'm really worried about that.
Don Coscarelli, you better not be long gaming us.
Yeah, he's putting it. It's out there in plain sight, and we're just like looking at it every time, and like, he's going to... That's what I worry.
I told you up front, boys, and we can't get annoyed, but I will.
Yeah, I also really like that they have that quote, the same quote, saying Phantasm the bloodly, bloodly, bloodly bar, and then a completely different voice comes in and goes, and a terrifying motion picture. It's kind of like, whoa, some fucking editing right here.
Yeah, yeah, boy. Okay, so I'm feeling that. I'm feeling that drive. I'm feeling the drive to survive and to dive.
Let's do it.
Into Phantasm Oblivion. But before we do, Tom,
okay,
we've got to play that game, that IMDb guessing game. Now, Phantasm 3 Lord of the Dead from 1994 scored a 6.1. It was not our favourite of the franchise. Each one has slightly dipped down so far.
But still strong.
Still going strong. What do you think Phantasm IV Oblivion, from a mere 4 years later, scored on IMDb?
Well, these things always seem to go down. But for three films previous, the Phantasm franchise has stayed in the 6 range. And I think maybe this could be 6 on the nose.
You're thinking 6 on the nose. I'm sorry to disappoint. It is slightly below that, but not by much, man. Not by much at all. It is a 5.5. 0.7.
That's fine.
Yeah, that is way fine.
That's absolutely rootin' tootin' good shooting. Let's do that.
Here we go. Listening to a song that plays out of nowhere, as if from another dimension, over the end credits of Phantasm IV Oblivion. It is a song that is not featured in the rest of the film, completely unlike anything else in the rest of the film. It is sung by Reggie the Ice Cream Man himself, real name Reggie Bannister, with his popular beat combo. This is the actual name of his band, Reggie B and the Jizz-Wailing Yard Doggies.
Reggie B and the Jizz-Wailing Yard Doggies.
Now, Tom, talk to me, baby.
It feels like a fitting ending to a film that baffled me from start to finish, and I'm gonna say I didn't love it.
I agree that it was baffling. I don't think you need to feel bad about that. Don't beat yourself up that you were baffled by it. I feel like this is Don Coscarelli in his David Lynch phase. There's alternate versions of people from different timelines. There's a multitude upon multitude of split dimensions. I didn't necessarily always know what was going on, but I enjoyed the ride. And Tom, you cannot complain because we got some answers.
Yeah, there was some stuff in, you know, there was some cool stuff in there. I think the big problem I had, apart from like, Phantasm films don't really make a lot of sense, if any, anyway. But the past three have had like a real sense of pace to them. Like we've watched like the past two films, there's just been so much stuff thrown at you at certain points in the films. You know, like the first 20 minutes is like, fucking hell, you're holding onto your seat because there's just so much shit going on. Whereas this is the film where Don Coscarelli is going to be like, nah, I'm going to be all like art house, which basically means stuff is just going to go on forever. And the pace of the film is like, for a 90 minute film, it felt so long. Like, it just takes ages for nothing to really happen.
But when stuff does happen, it happens pretty good. Now, I know what you mean, and there were moments where I was like, this is too disjointed, because a lot of the film...
Very disjointed in places.
There's a lot of the film which is just people staring into space and kind of these little montages and little flashes of scenes from other things happening and stuff happens without making any sense.
I mean, maybe the biggest issue is that, like, you know, like, there's not a lot of characters in the Phantasm universe. You've got Reggie the Ice Cream Man, you've got Michael, who are, like, your two leads, and then you've got Jody the dead brother, who's also a ball that pops up now and then. We've gotten rid of Kevin McAllister and
Rocky.
Rocky from the last film. So we're back to just, like, these guys. And they spend the time, nearly the entire film, apart.
Yeah, they do. And it's all about Reggie trying to catch up with Michael. So just to recap for our good lady listeners and gentleman listeners as well. At this point in the movie, when we pick up, Michael has had a ball implanted in his head.
By the tall man.
By the tall man.
And he fucks off at the end of the last film with the kind of ghost ball of his dead brother. They kind of go on the run.
Yeah.
And Reggie was pinned to a wall by loads of murder balls.
And as this film begins, we have a bit of a sort of a trippy recap, where it kind of recaps, but without any great detail. And we don't know if Michael has gone evil or not now he's got the ball in his head. And crucially, he doesn't seem to know if he's evil or not either. He just knows he's got somewhere that he needs to go. Turns out it's the middle of Death Valley.
Yeah.
He's riding in the hearse. Turns out the hearse drives itself. And then sometimes the tall man pops up and chats to him, and sometimes he disappears.
Yeah.
But he's still writing letters to Reggie, being like, I don't know what he wants. I don't know why I've got to go there, but I just have to go there. And this is kind of cool. And it's interesting, his like internal struggle. And then at the same time, we've got Reggie, who's like just driving across America with his yeah. four shotguns.
So we get the bit where like, yeah, like Michael's gone on the run, and then Reggie basically gets let go by the tall man. Obviously, like last time we saw him, he looked like he's absolutely definitely going to be killed because he's pinned to a wall by like dozens of murder balls. Mm. And then the tall man basically says, I'm letting you go because...
Yeah.
Because your part is not yet done. You know, kind of like, I'm letting you go because we need this film to happen and we don't have a lot of characters. And then, yeah, like Reggie's on the road and there's this amazing like monologue. We've already had one monologue from Michael, kind of recapping Michael's story. We then get another monologue from Reggie and it gets a bit confusing having all these like monologues going on, but because they're on their own the whole time, they have to just monologue.
Yeah.
And Reggie's like, has this amazing line. I was an ice cream man by trade, but now I'm a soldier.
A soldier that spends a lot of time trying to fuck people and, like,
yeah,
not actually doing much fighting. Yeah.
And it's like this thing like where, you know, he's like talking about, like, you know, like how we were, you know, me and my best friend, Michael, and my friend Jody, we were fighting against the tall man. And it's gone on for years and blah, blah, blah. Recap, recap, recap. Next time we see... We see Reggie, he's broken down his car in the middle of a desert and ghost brother Jody pops up and then Reggie's like, oh, fucking hell, not you. You're a dickhead. I don't want anything to do with you. I'm definitely not going to go chasing after Michael. And it's like, you just said you were a soldier in a war with your brothers in arms, Michael and Jody. Like, that's like... And then he goes, like, yeah, he's like, oh, go on, all right, I want once more for the ride.
Is it because he gets pulled over by the goblin cop? So after he tells Ghost Ball Jody to fuck off, Reggie gets pulled over by this cop who turns out to be, like, a full-size one of the Tall Man's goblins?
That was weird, yeah, he's, like, this new kind of villain. He looks a bit like a baddie out of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Is it just because he's had the same goblinification process, but he hasn't been sent back to the Tall Man's planet, so therefore he hasn't been shrunk down?
It's very hard to say, because... We never see another, like, goblin-y full-size person like him again. So he's just, like, some other evil guy.
What we do see is in the goblin cop's trunk, there's yeah. another little goblin person who's sort of half-goblin.
I think that's the cop.
The original cop.
I think that's the original cop. And he's been basically folded up, so he's, like, half his... He's, like, in that Friday the 13th film, you know, when the dad gets folded in half.
Yeah. And this goblin cop's in the back going, kill me! Kill me!
Yeah.
And then Reggie has a pretty decent showdown with this cop. He shoots him in the peen through the roof of the car. That's quite good.
Yeah, that's good.
Flips him the bird and goes, fuck you!
Then realises that the keys aren't in the car and he's just stuck in there.
The zombie cop like spews up some custard into Reggie's mouth. It's pretty gross.
And then Reggie blows up the car by getting a distress flare, which he just seems to pull out of his shoe. He just goes, whoop, there we go. Pops that in the fuel tank.
Yep, listeners playing car explosion bingo can mark that down as car explosion number one.
Yep. And that all just kind of happens, and then Reggie goes about his business, I guess. I think it's also important, like, to point out, there's these bits where Jody pops up to talk to Michael and talk to Reggie at the beginning of the film, and neither of them seem to like him.
No.
Like, they're both kind of like, it's like, oh, they spend all the other films going, oh man, wouldn't it be great if, you know, like, Jody was here, like, oh, my dead brother, my dead best friend's like, oh, fuck you, mate, I don't have anything to do with you. It's like, oh, hello, dead brother, you've let me down by being dead all of these years. And there's this amazing bit where Jody says to one of them, it's like, man, I wish it didn't have to be like this. And then they have... Not like a flashback, but a kind of like a pre-construction of like, or like, basically it's like an image of what things could have been like for them had the tall man not appeared and Jody not died. And it just involved three lads sitting on the bonnet of a car drinking beers while Jody, no longer a ghost ball, is like playing an unplugged electric guitar at them. And like Mike and Reggie are just like, this is just the best times. I'm so glad nothing really dark happened to us. And it's just like this like wonderful little glimpse into a parallel universe. And we were just like getting like, what is going on? Because they've been so, in this film, there's so many flashbacks to things from previous films, but also flashbacks to footage that was cut from Phantasm 1.
Now this, at first I was like, oh, this is odd. But as it went on, it really started to win me over as a bit of a masterstroke. Because 20 years almost have passed. It's been 19 years since the release of the first film. We've got the same four lead actors are all still there. The Tall Man, Jodie, Michael and Reggie. They're all the same actors here. It was a different Michael for Phantasm 2, but we're not dealing with him here. And 20 years have passed for them as human beings as well. And it keeps cutting back to all of this footage as of like 12-year-old Michael and like 20-year-old Reggie or however old he was. And it's all stuff we haven't seen before. And it's cut seamlessly side by side with them much, much older and sort of haggard and full of regret. And then they kind of recontextualize some of it. So it would be really interesting to know what those original scenes shot for were. There's moments where they kind of try and talk to their younger selves, and then it cuts back to this footage of them younger than we've not seen it before. And they're like, who's that voice? Who's saying that?
Yeah.
The main word I can use to describe this film is ambitious.
Yeah, I think it's trying to do a lot, but doesn't really all kind of like, it's not cohesive, I think, in any way. You kind of see what they're trying to do there, because there's bits where like, yeah, they have scenes that are cut. So it's this old footage that they use to like parallel with what's going on in the present day of the film, and it's like callbacks and stuff. And with some of that, I'm like, yeah, this is cool. I like seeing the old footage. I think it, you know, it's interesting that they've like gone back and be like, well, let's see, you know, if we can add this extra layer to the film. But I don't know if like there's a lot of bits like that where I was like, yeah, cool, but so like if you didn't put that in there, it wouldn't affect the film in any way. There's some of those scenes that are just there just to be like, we've got all this old footage, this is pretty cool, but it doesn't really add anything to the story.
Yeah, I agree with you. And this is not a plot driven film, this one. Others of them have been. It's not an action driven film like some of the others.
No, definitely
as well.
Not. I think what it wants to be a very like mood and atmosphere driven film, and I don't think it delivered on the atmosphere that like Don Coscarelli was really hoping that it was going to have.
It is worth saying that we are watching it in the middle of the day on quite a sunny day. We drew the curtains, we're not idiots. But I do think if you saw it at like a midnight cinema screening with like a bunch of slightly drunk people shouting at the screen, the vibe might have been slightly more oppressive.
No, I was thinking like, oh, I wonder how I would feel about this like a late night screening, like on a big screen. Would I feel differently about it? Because I feel like I don't want to be like, you know, ragging on this film, but like we've had three other films that have been like, I've been really kind of like, okay, cool, what's next? And with this, I was just kind of like, when, you know, it's like, when are we going to get to the fireworks factory? It was my feeling with this film.
We do get some fireworks, and they are coming, particularly with Reggie's plotline. But first, we've got a lot of Michael's plotline to wade through. So he ends up in Death Valley, and he kind of knows that he's arrived, and it feels like the Tall Man is trying to get him to make some sort of important choice. And we don't know what, but he's got the Tall Man gives him a version of his own suit.
Yeah, so it's like he wants him to become the new Tall Man.
Yeah. And he introduces him to one of the Dimension Fork tuning fork portals that's just in the middle of the desert. And then every time he looks, there's more and more of them.
Yeah.
Now, these ones don't go to the Tall Man's dimension or home planet.
Yeah.
They go through time. And so Michael starts going back in time to try and like understand the origins of the Tall Man, which is Tom. It's what you've always wanted.
Yeah, no. This is quite cool. You know, like when they started doing time travel, I got a little bit itchy. I was a little bit like, oh God, this is going to be another like unintelligible layer to the Phantasm franchise. But it's quite cool. Like there's one bit where like Michael goes to LA and everything is deserted. So instead of being in like a desert city or like, you know, small desert town, like we see so much in these films, big city, completely deserted, and then Jodie, Ghost Ball Brother, pops up and goes, "Boo! We need to go. There's a chance of infection."
Yeah.
And then you see the Tall Man walking through the streets, and maybe in that, maybe they've gone into the future.
Yeah.
And this is like the Tall Man has completely wiped everybody out. And then we go back, we get some glimpses of like the Civil War.
Yeah.
And the Tall Man being like a surgeon, like a field surgeon in the Civil War, and he's operating on Mike, and you're like, was Mike back then, or is this all part of a dream? And then Mike eventually goes and meets the young tall man in ye olde Civil
it's like
War
1800s
time.
Or something.
And this is pretty cool because like he's got a slight bit more of a comb over, and he's like, he doesn't have that low tall man voice. He's actually quite like sort of like folksy and like, you know, like seems like a really nice guy, and he's just like, oh, hello, you know, what are you doing? You know, like, what are you doing here? You're not from around here. Would you like some lemonade? Oh, you must have come through the portal, or you know, something like that. And
so yeah, even though it's before he's like multi-dimension portal tall man, evil guy, but he's still
it's
mystical
proto,
in some
proto,
way. He knows he's
man.
Got this portal. But he says to Michael, please, I've got so many questions for you. There's so many things you can tell me. So it's almost as if Michael popping up back there is what gives this younger tall man, whose name is Jebediah Morningside, it's almost like that's what gives him the kind of the inspiration or the hunger to really understand the dimension portals and then start going through himself, which is what causes all the problems. So is Michael the impetus for all of the bad stuff?
Yeah.
Because there's another scene that would suggest that as well,
mm.
which is made of stuff obviously shot for Phantasm 1, where Jodie tricks the tall man and gets a noose around his neck and hangs him up from a tree. And then later, Michael's walking along and he sees the tall man hanging from the tree, and the tall man's not dead, and he's just like, hey, can you cut me down, mate?
And for some reason he does.
Michael does, because the tall man is just like, oh, I promise... He's like, I promise I'll go away and never come back. And so Michael cuts him down, and then the tall man is just like, boy! Whang! Basically. So there's like two ways that kind of... Older Michael went back in time and inspired Jebediah Morningside to become the tall man.
Yeah.
And then younger Michael stopped the tall
could
man
have,
from
could have stopped
killed.
The tall man yeah. from... Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's like it's all starting to get very knotty.
Yeah.
And explaining a bit more maybe of why the tall man is so obsessed with getting Michael.
Yes, it's still not... Yeah, it's still a little bit vague, kind of like... You just get the impression that maybe the tall man wants him to be his successor.
Yes.
And he wants to get... But he has all these conversations with him, and it's quite interesting, like, instead of him, like, now being, like, in all the other films, he's been, boy, and I'm going to kill you and set a load of goblins on you. In this, he's, like, a little bit more tender, almost, with Michael. And it's like, you know, come with me, we'll go being tall together. And it's like, does he want to get the murder ball that's in Michael's head? Does he want Michael just to sort of, you know, be his protégé? Unclear, but like he obviously has designs for he's making plans for Michael.
Meanwhile, Reggie's storyline is certainly a lot more simple. He is driving through the desert trying to get to Death Valley so he can track down Michael, as he's been told to by Bull Ghost brother Jody. And he sees a girl also driving.
And instantly we're just like, uh-oh.
And like any self-respecting modern man, Reggie decides that he's going to follow her and try and crack on.
Yeah.
Now, she is in a terrible car accident when there's a tortoise walking across the road. And she goes, fuck, it's a tortoise! And just like completely slurs her car 90-degree angle sideways across the road. Flips it and is trapped in the car. Reggie then comes in, kicks the window in, drags her out, and then she goes, oh, I didn't think... I always thought if this was a movie, the car would explode. And then because it's a movie, the car explodes. Yeah. People playing Carsplosion bingo, ding, ding, ding. That's Carsplosion number two. So then her name's Jennifer, and she decides to ride with Reggie because he saved her life. They end up at an abandoned motel. He kicks in the door and convinces her to share a bed with him for the night.
Yeah.
Classic Reggie. He rants and raves about this tall man and dimension portals and shrunken goblins, and she's just like, oh, you're kooky.
Yeah, well, she like takes all of her clothes off kind of behind a transparent, like a shower curtain, and like Reggie's there just like... Hello, just like giving her the eye, and it's all a bit creepy.
I am very confused about the extent of the tall man's like reign, because it seems like these movies are getting increasingly post-apocalyptic, and there are so many like abandoned towns, and it's coming close to this like, oh, abandoned LA, there's a risk of infection, blah blah blah.
Yeah.
But nobody else seems to know it. Like, why does Jennifer, the girl, not know that this is going on? Has she not seen the abandoned towns herself? Like,
Yeah, there's, I mean, there is scant backstory on Jennifer, the girl, in this film. The only female character in this film, is she?
Well, there is the grandma from the first film keeps making showing up.
Yeah, random callback to the first film. Like, the blind grandma that does the, kind of, the Dune, the ganja bar,
yeah.
kind of, like, trial with young Michael pops up, and actually pops up in the flashback, in the past, with the tall man, the pre-evil tall man, back when he was
sure.
Jebediah. Yeah.
And was like, she his mum or something?
Who knows? Because when she pops up with him, I thought, cool, you know, maybe we're going to get some explanations. But no, I don't know. But it made me think, like, oh, is she another person that was, like, doing the same kind of experiments with him? And she has somehow gained this immortality or whatever it is that the tall man has? Don't know. Forget about it. Don't worry about it, folks. Just forget we even mentioned it. Let's just go back to Reggie and Jennifer.
Yeah, so what happens with them?
So, yeah, like, he was ogling her while she was getting undressed. And then they share a bed, and it's all going to be a little bit like a callback to the last film where he's like, come here, baby. And she's like, no, I make it a point never to get... And he was like, I like you, but I never get involved with anyone who's got bigger problems than me.
She never says what her problems are.
I mean...
Her car exploded.
Car did explode, but Reggie does seem completely fucking bananas. And then Reggie goes to sleep and has a weird dream.
He wakes up in Morningside Cemetery in an open grave. And he walks around. He's walking around at night. He's like, uh-oh, I shouldn't be here. And he finds Michael dressed as the tall man.
Yeah, and then he wakes up. And he wakes himself up by saying, boy. And he's like, oh, God, that was creepy and ooky. And then he turns over and Jennifer is lying on the bed. And she's borrowed one of his flannel shirts to sleep in. But it's only, like, it's like, buttoned up in a way that it's like showing off a lot of skin, and he's kind of like, oh, hello. Like, she's just wearing this shirt that's hardly buttoned up and some underpants. And like, Reggie's like, well, this is what Reggie likes.
Reggie's gonna do what Reggie's gonna do.
And he's there just like eyeing her up. And then her boobs start undulating.
Yeah, they kind of, through the shirt, they're like pulsing, throbbing.
Yeah, and he's like, far out. And he's like, well, that's all I needed. Reggie's like, that sounds like consent to me.
The shrooms are kicking in.
And starts, like, unbuttoning her shirt. And it's kind of like, oh, fuck's sake, Reggie. Stop being a massive perv. He opens the shirt and fuck me. So Jennifer's boobs are murder balls. Murder boobs, if you will.
Murder boobs.
And they're just, like, pulsating, trying to escape from her torso. And then she wakes up and is like, hey, Reggie, you want to get it on? And he's like... not really.
This bit was quite like Hellraiser-y, I thought.
Yeah.
Because the thing to note is it's not like when Michael's eyes turn into balls, where it's just like they're kind of naturally fitted
the glass
into his
over.
Body.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're like bleeding at the edges. These have been, they're either like bursting out from inside her or they've like forced their way
in. Yeah, yeah.
But these are like open wounds that are filled with murder balls.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, an old-fashioned mouse when you'd have the little rollable mouse inside.
Yes, yes, yes.
It's just been like crammed in like that.
Yeah.
And they're sort of spinning around and getting blood everywhere.
It's pretty grisly.
She doesn't seem to care. She's fine with it.
She's into it. And then the murder balls erupt out of her chest and start flying around the room trying to kill Reggie, and he manages to smash one of them with a sledgehammer,
yep.
And it bursts into flames, which is pretty cool, and another one tries to get him, like the spike comes out, and it goes into his hand. He manages to catch it, but it goes in his hand, and then the little drill comes out, and it drills through Reggie's hand, and he's like, no, I don't like that.
See it kind of burst through the palm of his hand, it kind of stretches, and then finally the drill goes,
explodes out, and it like sticks into the wall, he's pinned to the wall, and then Reggie grabs his tuning fork, because remember, that's a thing in the Phantasm world, and he gets his tuning fork, and he goes, and that makes the thing die. It explodes on his hand. And it's like, whoa, okay, cool. So, like, first point, not so many murder balls in this film.
There's a big swarm of them at the start.
I know, but that's in kind of like a weird, in one of the montages, you know, the big, like, There's like two dreamy montages back to back at the beginning of the film, and you see this big CGI swarm of murder balls. It's really cool. And then you kind of like, and that's like a big image in the trailer.
Yeah.
And then it gets very murder ball light.
Yes, although when we do get them, we do get murder boobs.
We do get murder boobs. We do get murder boobs. I'm not complaining about murder boobs. I'm just saying it's not as murder ball-y as perhaps it was sold to us.
No, I agree.
And then it was this point when I was like, you know, like how the tall man is just kind of like, I'm not going to kill you, Reggie, because.
Yeah.
So he's like, your part is not yet to play. So it just made me think like, so did he let him live so that he could be attacked by an ineffectual, very tall policeman goblin? And then for some reason, hook up with this woman with absolutely no backstory who is just there to have murder balls fly out of her boobs. Is that what the tall man had planned for Reggie? The whole
is his plan is all along.
Like the tall man's got like these really big, sinister plans for Michael. And then for Reggie, he's just fucking with him. Like he's like, this is gonna be a right laugh. Wait till I tell the goblins back at the you know, back at the office.
I mean, maybe. It does seem like there's a lot going on and there's a lot of moving parts, and it feels like Michael is constantly this sort of playing piece that goes back and forth between doing things that the tall man wants and doing things that Jodie wants. And then sometimes I don't think we can trust Jodie either, but sometimes we definitely can. And then Reggie is kind of just trying to play catch up, and he's as baffled as we are. So I know it's confusing and I know it's not great storytelling, but I don't mind the kind of slow creeping dread that comes in from just the knowledge that you are way in over your head that you cannot possibly comprehend. There's a lot of the H.P. Lovecraft stories are about like realizing that there is something so vast going on that you are just but a tiny speck in it and you can't possibly understand. I'm not saying that Don Coscarelli is H.P. Lovecraft. I'm just saying he's maybe read some.
Yeah, it feels like, you know, there's like the bits with Reggie are there to like pep things up a bit and like, you know, you're not really meant to ask the question, but why has that happened? And who, you know, like, who was Jennifer? She's there. There's no real kind of, like, backstory for her. And then her boobs turn into murder balls. And then Reggie ends up smashing her head in with a sledgehammer.
It's kind of now, this is not a great thing to say, but it's kind of a shame we didn't get to see her head get smashed in with a sledgehammer. I feel like in Phantasm 1 or 2, there would have been quite a good, like, latexy effects shot of the head getting smashed with the sledgehammer. Mm. Whereas this is just, we see it from her point of view, the sledgehammer comes towards it, and then it cuts to black.
Yeah.
Those first few films, admittedly, we have just had quite a gory bit with his hand getting drilled and with the murder boobs themselves, but this one also doesn't have that much gore.
I was wondering about this, whether or not this film has a much lower budget than the other films for some reason, because there's so, you know, which is why they're using so much footage that was already in the can, like, you know, that the unused footage and just flashbacks to a lot of footage that we've seen in previous films. And then a lot of the film is just like Reggie driving around, it's Michael sitting in a desert, and then, you know, like a thing appears and stuff happens, but okay, you know, like why it's so kind of light on action.
Yeah.
That maybe they just didn't have the funds for that.
I think a real symptom of that might be that what we do get a lot of instead of the balls is the little goblin guys with their brown cloaks.
Yeah.
And I cannot put my finger on it, but there is something about them that just isn't quite right this time. The goblins in the first films, they look like dead people. They look like little dead people. Whereas this is the time where they look most like Ewoks.
Yeah. There is a bit in it where Michael's walking around in the desert through all these like big rock formations, and the goblins are running around in their little brown hoods, and it's like it is just Jawas running around in the desert in the first in Star Wars Episode 4 or whatever. You know, like it's really Star Warsy. Yeah. Just one bit.
And then not I feel scary.
Maybe it's part that like a lot of this, they used to show up in the dark, and there are some scenes where they show up in the dark, but there's also a lot of scenes where they show up in the middle of a desert in the daylight, and you can't really hide the rubbery maskiness of what's going on there, in broad daylight. I don't know. Anyway, so these two kind of like meandering things are going on, and then Reggie finally gets to find Michael.
In the desert.
Yeah, he gets to the desert and he finds Michael's car, and he's like, right, time to suit up. He puts on his ice cream man outfit, which is like Cool. Okay, great. Nice to see the ice cream outfit back on. He's like, I've had this in the trunk of my car for 20 years. I'm not, you know, I was an ice cream man by trade, but I'm retired since. I'm a soldier now. But I'm going to put it on for just because it's kind of cool. It's only because it's kind of cool.
It still fits. He's 20 years older, but he still wears the exact same size.
It's like a vanity thing. He's like, still got it. You know, so like, you know, we get the four-barrel shotgun.
That's
Reggie,
pretty cool.
Reggie's gone full on ice cream man, and he goes around and like shoots a load of goblins.
Yeah, pow, pow, pow. That bit's quite good.
And at this point, Mike isn't there. They found the car, but Michael has gone into a portal with Jodie.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's because they're in the future. They're looking at the future.
They're looking at the future, and then they come back, and then like Michael and Reggie are like, yeah, great to see you, man. And then like Michael's like whispering, like, don't trust Jodie because we're not in this film. Okay. And then Reggie like sneakily does that thing, you know, like where if you like fold up a note in your hand and like shake someone's hand and like pass. He does that, but with a tuning fork,
which is quite a big object.
Object, and it just makes me feel like kind of like. And at this point, it's like, has all of Reggie's journey just been to give Michael a tuning fork? I hope he has something else to do in this film.
Nope,
not much.
So
he takes a tuning fork, and then like Michael's like, right, back into the portals,
and they go back to, as Jodie describes it, the night it all started.
Yeah.
And we see Jebediah Morningside, the tall man before he was the tall man.
Back in Civil War times.
Back in Civil War times. He's in this really cool room where it's like, it's kind of like a lab. He's
it's like a steampunk kind of lab, yeah.
And there's this bit of sort of exposition where he's... Jodie's just sort of explaining, oh, well, he was the Undertaker, got fascinated with the boundary between life and death. It was his life's work. And he wrestled with the idea of breaking through. And then one day he was brave enough to go through the portal. And this is why I think it's maybe the thing that kind of spurred him on was meeting Michael back in the day. So he goes through the portal, this like prototype dimension fork that he's built.
As he does, Michael tries to stab him, but he can't. He phases through him. And Jodie's like, oh no, you can't do that because we're in separate dimensions, which is a bit weird seeing as like they went back. Michael's already been to this dimension and has communicated with Jebediah Morningstar. But for some reason, now they're on a different wavelength, so he can't communicate with him. And then...
He
goes through.
Yeah, goes through, and Michael says, oh, but we got to kill him. We got to get him back. And then Jodie says, Jebediah Morningside never does come back. And then immediately the tall man in the suit comes through. And so it's kind of like, it's never explained, but here's my theory, mm-hmm. Hear me out. Jebediah Morningside, I think, is the first human being to ever traverse the dimension from ours to wherever the tall man comes from.
Mm.
I don't think it worked out well for him. I think he got nobbled quite quickly by the baddies on the other side. But I think they've kind of used him as a sort of a template to like create these bodies for themselves.
Yeah.
Because we know there's more than one tall man, because we saw at the start of the second film, I think, when the first tall man got killed, another tall man came through, pulled his body in and then took his place. So we know there's multiple tall men. They all look like Jebediah Morningside. So they've kind of just done a kind of a copy paste of his body, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And they didn't know about our dimension until Jebediah Morningside showed up. And just like when Michael showed up, they were like, oh, you're from the other place. We have so many questions. We didn't know about this thing, so let's go through. So it's all his fault, which is all Michael's fault.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But when he comes through, the tall man seems to be able to maybe see Michael through the dimensions. And so then Michael and Jodie run through another portal, and they appear in a, like, outside in the graveyard. And Michael and Jodie are separated, and Michael's like, over here, Jodie, come over here, mate. And he comes over, and then Michael stabs him, and he's kind of like, I knew, like, something comes. Oh, there's this whole bit in the film where it's questioned whether or not Jodie actually died in the first film, or he kind of disappeared.
Mm.
So we've always understood that he died. And then there's this question of, like, did he not die in this? Maybe he didn't die. And then in it, Jodie goes, oh, no, I did die. And then Michael's like, great, good to know. So then he stabs Jodie. He's like, because I didn't want to kill my own brother. but good job, you're already dead. It's like, that was unnecessary.
Yeah.
That was very unnecessary.
Because he kills his brother, kills him dead, squish.
Stabs him.
And then he runs away, and then immediately another Jodie appears.
Yeah.
And we've got the dead body of the Jodie he's just killed
still
in the
shot.
Background. Still in shot. And the new Jodie comes in, pulls him through a portal, takes him into a marble mausoleum where the new Jodie and the tool man are holding him down and trying to do like a living autopsy on him.
Yeah, they get like a buzzsaw murder ball and stick it in the side of... Michael's head to try and get the murder ball out. Michael pulls a tuning fork out of his pocket, goes ding dong. That freezes both Jodie and the tall man. He grabs the murder ball, sticks it into this other Jodie's face.
That's quite cool.
And then, like, oh, what the fuck happens
then
after that?
Then he goes back through the portal.
Goes back through another portal. The tall man follows him through. So now we're back in the desert.
In the present day.
With Reggie and the hearse that Michael had been riding around in, which Michael has been constructing a DIY Michael brand murder ball out of, like, bits of the engine.
This is so weird.
Which he then goes, like, Michael murder ball power. His eyes glaze over like balls. And the DIY murder ball stabs the tall man in the head.
Don't faze him.
Don't faze him, son. He's like, toys. And then Michael's powers go, oh, we're doing something else. We're doing something else. Who says we're not going to do more things in this film? Oh, and then the car explodes.
People playing Carsplosion bingo, that is Carsplosion number 3. Our third and final Carsplosion. If you have collected a prize, come see me at the end of the podcast.
Yep, so, right, the car's exploded. It's blown up the tall man. And I'm just thinking, do we really think that's going to have done anything? And the answer is no, because another tall man just comes through the portal. And it's like,
but is this
good idea, Michael?
But is that a tall man from a different timeline, or is this one of the replacement tall men? Like, when one tall man dies,
I think it's a replacement.
Does a new one generate? And is that a replacement for the one that died?
I think so. That's what I would go
with.
So
you don't think that in the home dimension there's like thousands of tall men all coexisting and living together and going, this is really confusing. Who is anyone?
I do actually quite like that.
So yeah, the new tall man comes through and is like, fine, well, that one's been killed. I'm here. I'm the replacement. And he kind of does the most rank, like, baby delivery of the ball that's inside Michael's head, where he kind of squeezes it out of this little wound in Michael's head, and the murder ball kind of comes out of his brain, and Michael's like, this is really painful. I have had no epidural.
Yeah.
This is gross. So I don't understand why the tall man wants the ball that's in Michael's head when he's the one that put it there in the first place.
Exactly. But then he's also been spending half the film where it feels like he wants Michael to come and work for him, or, like, you know, like, to, you know, like, I've been waiting for a boy to take over when I don't die and just regenerate. Like, yeah, so I was kind of like, so why does he want the ball if he's been wanting Michael? I don't know. Unless
do you think it's because Michael rejected him?
Maybe.
And so all this, he's like realised by this point, okay, Michael's never going to come over to my side of things. Give me that ball back and I will find someone else. Maybe that's a similar thing to what happened to Jennifer with the ball boobs.
Maybe.
You know, maybe she'd already gone through this process and had decided, yeah, okay, I'm up for it.
Yeah.
And had she said no, he would have been like, well, give me those balls back then.
Yeah. I don't know. And then Reggie tries to stop the tall man, but the tall man magically stops him from being able to shoot his four-barreled shotgun, and he just says, ice cream man, and just, like, throws him on the floor. Don't faze me, son. And then he takes the ball from Michael's head and fucks off through a portal. Michael is, like, saying to Reggie, I'm dying, Reg. And then, like, Reggie's like, hold on, I'll be back. And he gets his gun and he's got his ice cream outfit on and he goes through the portal to kind of, like, I don't know, venture into the unknown to get the ball, the Michael ball back. And to get Michael ball back. and to stop the tall man. And then we kind of fade to black and go back to some more repurposed, deleted footage from Phantasm 1.
Now, I've got to say, aside from murder boobs, this final sequence was maybe my favourite of the whole film. I really, really loved this. So what we see is, you know, 12-year-old Michael walking down the street in his hometown. It's the night. It's dark. And he's walking along, and we hear the voice of Michael in the present day, in the future, much older Michael, going, "Reggie, I'm dying, I'm dying." And in the flashback, young Reggie pulls up in his ice cream van, picks up young Michael. They get in, they're driving along. We hear the voice again, and they go, "Did you hear something?" And they go, "No, it must have just been the wind." And then they drive off into the dark. And what we saw, I think, is Michael dying a peaceful death.
Yeah, but it's kind of echoing throughout the timeline.
Or he just kind of, that was kind of his life, not flashing in front of his eyes, but kind of he went back to like a happier time. So it's just this moment of peace with him and his best friend just driving through into the night, disappearing off. But like, I just think it's so cool that they had this footage that was just this eerie, really nicely shot, very black footage of the two characters not really talking and just going, "Did you hear that?"
And just adding this little thing to it. And
that really gives it this whole other meaning. And like, that could have been anything, that shot originally.
I think that's like the nicest bit of reused footage. Like, as an ending to the film, like, I feel that this film ends with, like, all the Phantasm films end with questions. Mm. And I feel like this one really throws you out there and leaves you hanging, because it's kind of like, so, you know, like, what was any of this film for? Is, you know, what was the deal with Jodie? Is Michael really dead? Where is Reggie going to go? We've had answers about the Tall Man, but have we? There are still so many questions. Like, you know, we know that Jebediah
Morning Sign
went through the portal, but he never came back. So what is the thing that, you know, what is the Tall Man? So many, so many questions, but it ends on this quite sort of,
it's like haunting, eerie, but it's peaceful, it's nice, I don't know.
So I was kind of like, that's a cool ending, but it was also just felt, it was a mix of like, okay, that was, you know, nicely done, but like, is also a very frustrating end to a film that just kind of dragged and was just throwing so much out there, and I was a bit disjointed and quite sort of weirdly paced.
Yeah, I know what you mean, Tom. I know exactly what you mean. So it feels like what it's done is it's set up a lot of cool stuff, cool potential for the fifth and final film of the franchise, which is coming up next. That will be Phantasm Ravager.
I mean, I'm really glad that there is another part, and I really hope that that film, after all of this and after all the questions, all this weird stuff, I hope it's a proper end.
Now, I have some facts for you about it. We obviously won't talk about it too much because we'll save that for the next episode. But it is not directed by Don Coscarelli, who's done all the others. Don Coscarelli was heavily involved, produced it, co-wrote the script, I believe, with the person that did direct it. And I think the person that directed it, I may have my facts wrong, he was certainly a key crew member from Phantasm 1.
Okay.
It may have been like the editor maybe, or someone that worked in a very important part. So it's keeping it in the family. The other crucial factor is, remember how we were saying with this one, oh my God, there's so much time has passed.
Yeah.
19 years between the first film and the fourth film.
Yeah.
Well, it's 18 more years until we get our fifth film.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. So
that's a monster of a gap.
Just want to check I haven't done that maths wrong. 98 to 2016. That's 18 years, right?
Maybe.
Okay.
Who knows?
I'm going to have to do the maths on that. But so huge, huge. Now, I know that we're getting Reggie the Ice Cream Man, and I know we're getting Angus Scrimm, the actor who plays the Tall Man.
And I wouldn't be surprised to see anybody else pop back into this, because now they've gone into, like, they've dipped into this, like, kind of going back in time stuff, and like Jodie's already come back as some kind of a weird ghost thing, and whatever, you know, like there's Reggie's supposedly, I guess, going after this ball that contains Michael's soul or brain or whatever, would suggest that Michael will return, that like Michael is the MacGuffin of the film. So I wouldn't be surprised to see anybody come back.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's going to be some huge heft, because once we've delivered this film, that is an almost 40-year span from of this continuous story, this continuous uninterrupted... Because every one of these films has picked up where the previous one left off.
Which is really cool for a franchise. I mean, like, it doesn't always make sense, but I think it's really cool that they do pick up where they left off and continue with the threads that they've started, rather than just kind of ignore stuff and go off on like a little side quest.
So other than just some general answers or a conclusion, is there just any sort of nice little details that you would particularly like to see from Phantasm Ravager?
I don't know. Yeah, like you kind of want it to be a bit of a, yeah, like a to close out the story in a satisfying way. I think it would be nice to have a little bit more action in it because some of the film, like 2 and 3, deliver on some quite fun action, and this was quite action light. If they're going to go action-y, I'd like to see a bit more action. If they're going to go a bit more horror-y, I would like it to be a bit more horror-y. I feel that this film was not really either. It was trying to be atmospheric, but yeah. I wouldn't really say it was made a strong case for being a horror film, apart from like, you know, like murder boobs and like there's some little goblins, but it's
really interesting. The trailer called it sci-fi horror.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
The franchise is definitely a sci-fi.
Putting it in the
thing.
Same category with like Ridley Scott's Alien.
Yeah, why not? Well, we've had those bits where it's like where Reggie and Michael were doing a bit of a Ripley with the flamethrower.
Yeah, why not?
So
fuck it.
We've had callbacks to Aliens. We've had like some references to Terminator 2. So.
Loads of Dune references. Yeah, that's pretty sci-fi as it gets.
Yeah. So what about you? What do you want?
This is kind of juvenile, but I just want to see a bit of gore, I think, at this point. I want...
It was a bit ball gore, like, you want the... There was no drill in the face in this one.
Yeah.
Drill in the hand. But you didn't
that
have that thing
good.
Of, like, the drill, the ball going through that guy's back and out of his face.
For a film that's all about the blurry line between life and death, let's have some...
Yeah?
Let's have some blurry lines between life. I'm talking walking corpses. I'm talking, you know, that kind of thing. I want to see just a pair of legs that's severed at the waist walking around spurting blood out of the top.
I kind of want to see, like, you were saying, like, there are all these empty towns. Like, we're going that far into the future. We're like, so much time will pass between this film and the last one. You want to see maybe a slightly dystopian, apocalyptic kind of world where everything is... empty and
yeah.
You know, people actually live, you know, what are the real life consequences for people in that,
yeah.
Rather than it just being like we're driving through a town.
Yeah,
want to know what's behind the town, the people who live there
and people that listen to this podcast. If you have seen Phantasm IV Oblivion and feel like you absolutely must share your opinion with us, have we misunderstood something, have we forgotten something, do you have a theory that contradicts one of ours, then please do drop us a line. You can reach us on Twitter at BitterEndPod or on Facebook at BitterEndPod. Hope you've been enjoying the season, and we hope that you will join us next month for Phantasm Ravager.
Ooh, doggy. Well, until then, I'm Tom Denny.
I'm Todd Jordan.
And keep on big ballin'.